Hey, welcome to Hellbent, a feminist podcast for those who resist and persist. I'm Devin, and today on the pod, I had the pleasure to sit down with Christina Reynolds, who is the VP of Communications at Emily's List. I've been really looking forward to this interview because I have been speaking over the past couple of months with women running for office all over the country. So for today's show, I want to do a slightly different format. I am going to play a couple of clips from previous interviews that I've done with women running for Congress and how they relate back to this central theme that Christina and I talked about, which was women running face serious challenges, especially in terms of how they're viewed by the public, how men view them, and the sort of sexism that they've experienced on the campaign trail. So I'm going to play clips from my interview with Lauren Underwood, Alexandra Chandler, and Jess Phoenix. So while I don't have one specific hellion this week, I would like to take a moment to shout out to all of the women whom I've spoken to and all the women in this country who are running for positions from school board to Senate and the courage they put forth in taking on this huge task. Like Christina and I talked about, more than 34,000 women have reached out to Emily's List to get started on their run for office. So hellion this week are these women who are putting in the time and the effort and who are solving our problems and who are doing so even knowing that they have the extra layer of challenges of being a woman running for office in this country. For episode 97 of our show, I spoke with Lauren Underwood, who is running for Congress out of Illinois' 14th district. And she once said that she was expecting racism on the campaign, but not sexism or misogyny. And when I asked her about that, she said that she had not experienced a whole lot of overt racism, but was shocked by the amount of sexism and misogyny that she encountered on the campaign trail. So she explained why she wasn't expecting the misogyny.
I will tell you, I have not encountered as much overt racism as I would have ever expected. The sexism is something that I did not anticipate because I'm a nurse. And so I've spent my career either clinically in this female dominated profession or in health policy, which again, has been so many women. I've always had female bosses prior to my current job, my entire career. And so women have led at all levels from the executives on down and, you know, promotion potentials, you know, being challenged at work and given that hard assignment. Those kinds of things have always been provided to me or offered to me. And, you know, my gender had not been a barrier to my advancement in the workplace. And so when I started running for office, started this campaign for Congress last summer, I was ready for overt racism, you know, the N-word, slurs on Twitter, you know, that kind of thing. What I wasn't anticipating was one, constantly being underestimated, challenged on my credentials. And then that's more of like the nonviolent, passive, people not taking me seriously because I'm a woman piece. And then the misogyny, right, where there is some kind of a threat.
I think her point about being from a field that is dominated by women, that's led by women, really does point to the fact that when women are in charge, they make sure that women also get ahead. And that when you come from a background like that, where you just assume that that's how it always works, it really can be a shock to find out that, you know, when women aren't in charge, when women aren't the leadership of a given field or corporation, that it is really disgusting out there. And to that end, I asked Alexandra Chandler, who is running for Congress out of Massachusetts' 3rd district, I asked her about what she had experienced on the campaign trail. Not only is she a woman running for office, but she's a trans woman running for office. And she had a really interesting story about another woman, a progressive woman, who came up to her and asked her a question that no one would ever ask a man under any circumstances.
I have an anecdote to tell on that. Yeah. I was just at a town hall slash presentation about my congressional run last night. And I had a woman come up to me afterwards, a very liberal, progressive woman, supportive of my run, who very seriously, and I could tell it was heartfelt, asked, you know, the only thing I worry about you with this run is, well, what will happen to your family?
Right.
You know, and it's like, I then answered that, well, I do have, I'm very fortunate to have a wonderful wife as a partner. Right. I also have my parents right here and all that. But it was that, how many men get asked that question?
And the fact of the matter is that these sort of questions simply never get asked of men. No one asks them how they're going to juggle their career and their kids. No one asks men if they have a plan for balancing home and work life. And the fact that women are asked that constantly is really speaks to the ingrained misogyny that we have in this culture. And then finally, I have a clip from my interview with Jess Phoenix, which was episode 99. And Jess was an interesting interview. She is a scientist. She's a geologist. And I asked her about the sexism that she encountered on the trail. And she said that she definitely encountered it, that there was definitely a lot of sexual harassment. But she talked about how coming opposite from Lauren Underwood, coming from a male-dominated field, how she's kind of developed a thick skin and it the misogyny doesn't really bother her anymore.
Have you experienced any sort of sexism or misogyny or anything that doesn't have anything to do with your positions or background?
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a leading question.
Most of it. Yeah, no, it's okay. The short answer is yes. And that is, you know, I see most of it online. And that's, I think, because people are empowered to hide behind the anonymity of their keyboard. I don't think that a lot of them would say that to anyone's face, the kind of things that I hear online. I've been called a piece of ass. And I find that funny because it has no descriptor. It's like calling somebody a doorknob. It's like, okay, that means nothing. Like, okay, a piece of ass. Like, all right, great. It's not even like you're hot piece of ass, you're sexy piece of ass. No, it's right. Just a piece of ass. So, okay, weird, fine. sure. But it's a very dehumanizing thing. And I think that's the, any type of sexual harassment is very dehumanizing. And fortunately, I've worked in male-dominated industries my whole career, like my whole working life, which now, gosh, what, I'm 36, so 19 years of work experience almost, and, you know, it's in various industries, and I will tell you, it's always been pretty much male-dominated wherever I've worked. So, you know, I'm used to it, and it's something where I think I've developed sort of, you know, a shell about warding it off, so it doesn't really take me out of commission or anything, but then I think about it, and I'm like, should I have to have developed that kind of protective attitude,
right?
You know, defensive, like, or being ready for it. You know, you're constantly ready. And I'm sure you've experienced it. Most women I know have experienced it where you're just ready for the bad thing. And it means that you're kind of on edge all the time, even if you don't realize it. And women shouldn't have to grow up like that. Nobody should. Nobody should deal with that.
I talk about this a little bit later with Christina, but I mean, I wish... I understand that response, and I think it's great that women have strategies for dealing with deeply ingrained rape culture and misogynistic behavior. But it just it really upsets me that women from male-dominated fields are not surprised by the misogyny. They expect it because they know that in these systems where men have traditionally been in power, women are going to be considered second-class citizens. So those were just three very relevant clips from past interviews that I think really illustrate nicely what Christina and I talk about. And if talking to Christina showed me one thing, it's that women are out there
doing the damn thing, regardless of what men are saying and regardless of what society is saying. And it is my eternal gratitude check that there are women like Christina out there doing this work. And there are women like Jess and Lauren and Alexandra and Gina Ortiz Jones and Jen Longden who are running for office, who are standing up and solving a problem and saying, I don't care what you say, I'm going to fucking do this. Christina Reynolds is the vice president of communications at Emily's List, an organization that helps women run for office. She is also an Obama administration alum and all around fascinating person. So welcome, Christina.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm very excited. Yeah. Love the podcast.
Thank you so much. So I want to start. Can you explain a little bit about what Emily's List is and exactly what you do to help women run?
Sure. So Emily's List started about 33 years ago. It started with Ellen Malcolm literally bringing together a number of women in her basement with their Rolodexes. For those of you who don't know what a Rolodex is, it's like a paper version of your contact list, to raise money for women, because what they realized was the women were never the establishment candidates. At that point, no Democratic woman had ever been elected of her own right to a Senate seat. So there were ones who had been appointed or, for example, ran and filled their dead husband's seats, but this was before Emily's List came together and helped elect Barbara Mikulski in their first full election cycle. Since then, we've grown from an organization that helps largely just Senate and then expanded into House races to an organization that works with women up and down the ballot and from the recruitment phase all the way up to election. So we do everything from, we're very heavily involved in recruitment, particularly right now on the state and local level, as your listeners probably know, there are a ton of seats where Democrats just don't run. Mm-hmm. And in a year when we're seeing the Democratic excitement and progressive excitement where it is, we want women in those seats so that they can, you know, engage voters and make a play where maybe one hasn't been made before. So we start with recruitment. We've been historically involved in, for example, Stephanie was a big part of the recruitment of Elizabeth Warren to run for Senate, because we live in a world where even an Elizabeth Warren has to be convinced that she's qualified to run for Senate. The exciting news for us this year is that the reaction to Donald Trump's election, as your listeners know, because they've done it, women have stood up and said, okay, this is a problem and I'm going to fix it. And so we have more women just coming to us saying, I want to run. What can I do? We're up to over 34,000 women since Election Day in 2016 have reached out. The previous high was 920 women.
Yeah.
Who'd reached out in one election cycle. So you can see what that, you know, what that means. And so from there, when someone says, okay, I might want to run, what do I do? You know, if we haven't had to recruit them, or if we have and they're here, we do a lot of trainings. Last year, we trained 2,400 women
running for office who are standing up and solving a problem
some more advanced
and
trainings,
saying, I don't care what you say.
A training center online. We've done a bunch of Facebook Live and webinars and things like that for our community out there. We train them. We help them find staff. We help them raise money. We do a little of everything here. Just to try and help those women get elected. And, you know, and we also, we make endorsements and then we raise money to run independent expenditure campaigns. So that's, you know, that's something that happens independent of those campaigns. But we're really proud of the work that we do to try and elect women. We also think that, 19% of the House is women, and we're supposed to count it as a victory that now a record 23% of the Senate, yay, you know, is women, and we think that's not near enough. And so, you know, we're fighting to flip the House. We're fighting to, you know, hold those seats and hopefully flip the Senate and flip a lot of state legislative state legislatures, rather, because that's where a lot of bad stuff is happening, right, and redistricting is coming. But beyond that, we're also looking at things like Democratic seats, because when safe Democratic seats open up, a lot of times the establishment is like, great, we have this great dude, let's get him in there.
Right.
And we want those to be women. And, you know, that's exciting. What's exciting is that this year, for example, Texas has never sent a Latina to Congress, which is crazy. And this year, they're going to send their first two. Sylvia Garcia and Veronica Escobar won their primaries outright, and they're in safe Democratic seats. And so they're going to go fill two now open Democratic seats. They're not flipped, but we're really thrilled that we just replaced two dudes with two great Latinas.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's, we do a little of all of that. And it's, I got to say, it is the cure for what ails you in Trump's America, is to come into work every day and get to work on that, because there's some pretty inspiring stories out there.
Yeah, that is actually incredible. So I think a lot of people, you mentioned your previous high had been about 920 women. Now you're up to 34,000.
That's correct. Yep.
With this huge influx of women running, have you found that it's easier to convince women to run?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And here's the, you know, in some ways, it's not, I mean, for those of us, so I worked on Hillary's campaign. I will say that the day after the election, I was, you know, firmly like crawling under the covers and not ever wanting to come out, right? And I think a lot of people around here at the time worried that women would say, okay, if Hillary can't beat that guy, how am I going to beat someone? Mm-hmm. And instead, women took what I think is an incredibly inspiring and maybe not all that surprising view, which is, if that guy can run for president, I'm sure as hell qualified to run for school board, for House, for Senate, for whatever. And so we're seeing a lot of women who just, you know, either had worried before, like maybe the race will be too hard, maybe I'm not qualified enough. You know, we've all seen the studies, right? A woman doesn't apply for a job until she meets every single requirement, and a man just kind of throws caution to the wind, right? And women instead looked at it and said, one, yeah, I can do this. And two, I have to do this because someone's got to clean up the mess that is about to get made, especially with a Republican Congress that is just backing him up every step of the way. And like I said, I don't mean to sound like Pollyanna, but it's really inspiring to see these stories and to hear them and to have so many women come out. And, you know, we're in the like enviable position of, we like to say it's a good problem to have, where sometimes we've got multiple pro-choice Democratic women running in races. And it's like, awesome. You know, that's great, because nobody complains when there are too many dudes running for office.
That
right.
That's true.
So we are, we're really excited about it. And I think, you know, and these women are running, you know, they're running to fix a problem, which is what you see more often. Like, men sometimes are running to advance their career, to get to the next level, da, da, da. Women are running to fix a problem. Like, I know you talked to Lauren Underwood. Lauren is a good example of someone who, you know, has dealt with her own health issues, was a nurse, has, you know, done health policy, and saw what was coming and thought, like, my opponent voted against protecting, you know, people from pre-existing conditions, right? From losing their coverage because of pre-existing conditions. I got to fix that. And that's what we're seeing around the country, is stories like that. They're not just running to advance their resume. They know that there are real problems and they're going to fix them.
So I know that a lot of women are seen negatively when they display ambition, which was a big part of why people kept saying, I just don't like Hillary Clinton. So do you think them running to fix a problem is seen more favorably than if they were to run because they wanted to advance their career?
Well, yes. In that, I mean, I think I'm always a believer in, like, when you're sort of your truest self, when you're campaigning, that's when you do best, right? I think voters have a bullshit detector, and I think they see if you're arguing something that's not quite right. And so I'm always a believer in you should run for the reason that you're running, right? And be open about that. And the nice thing for us is our women are running to fix the problem. That's great.
Yeah,
yeah. But I also think, I mean, you've hit on a problem we saw with Hillary. We've seen now, like, there's just something about Elizabeth Warren, right? Something about Kamala Harris. And the reality is, I think, one, I think that's easier on a local level because you can actually talk to people and they can get it and see what you're doing at a more up close level. But yeah, it is still a problem for women candidates. Now, the beautiful thing is the more people see women as running for office, hopefully, the less they will see it as something odd and something off-putting, right? So that's something that we are really rooting for. The more women out there, the more women that run. I mean, you know, God bless Hillary for taking all that fire, right? But hopefully it gets easier. And hopefully, if you see a Congress where we're not having to celebrate 19%, but it's actually, you know, a little more representative, then you think that's more normal. Right. And you think that's something that, like, it's not ambitious, you know, or that ambition is not a bad thing. That's wanting to fix the world. And so that's something, and we're certainly seeing it. I mean, Virginia was kind of the first bellwether there. A lot of people were paying attention to the governor's race, but, you know, Emily's List, we endorsed 16 women running for the state legislature in Virginia. 13 of them won, and 11 of those were flip seats. So 11 of the 15 flips in Virginia were women. And that, to me, says that, like, okay, maybe we're getting some, you know, maybe people can go out and it may take a little bit, you know, it may take the lift of a wave year. It may take, you know, a little bit of extra juice there, but they did it. And, you know, Danica Rome and Hala Ayala and Elizabeth Guzman and Jennifer Carroll Foy and all of those fantastic women, you know, will make it easier for the next one. So we're excited to see what happens there.
I also want to ask, because a common criticism of women running and being in leadership roles is that there's an emotional or vulnerable component that they're supposed to act like men, right? They're not supposed to emotional vulnerability. Have you seen a shift in that understanding of women in leadership?
I can't point to actual research, but I will say I think the fact that we have a president who goes on temper tantrums, you know, who seems like he's about to declare war on Amazon, which, like, if that man takes away my Amazon Prime, I'm coming for him, right? Like, yeah. So, you know, seems to do this just because he doesn't like Jeff Bezos, right?
Right.
I think that helps some, that maybe there are different types of emotions at play and maybe we should stop just applying them in the most overly simplistic, overly stereotypical ways. So I think that helps. I think what we're seeing, and I love this, is that our women are running to speak to the, like, they're running, like I said, as their truest selves, right? Like, this is why I'm running, because I care about this issue in the district. Danica Rome is a great example of that,
right?
Where Danica, obviously, first transgender woman elected in Virginia and one of the first around the country. And she ran against the most homophobic, just hate-filled candidate or incumbent. And she called it out, right? She was not afraid to speak her truth and call out who she was. But what she ran on was traffic in the district, right? She ran on the roads there. Yes. And that's the thing that I think our women are seeing. You know, this is not a one size fits all type thing that I think too often political hacks like me have tried to, you know, stick on people. It's not a, like, fit in this mold. Right. And I think the more people show, I don't fit in a mold, mold. I fit the district. Like, I fit my voters, and I stand for them. And the more the voters see, yes, this is someone who has lived my life, the more it's like that sort of, oh, the women will be overly emotional is taken out of it, because maybe it's, maybe that kind of emotion is okay. And maybe we see, you know, maybe that's just too simplistic of a way of looking at things.
Right.
So I do think it gets better.
Right. Right.
I don't think we've solved that problem yet, but I do think it gets better.
So I know I've talked to a lot of female candidates running across the country, and the common thread that runs through a lot of them is that they do experience a lot of sexism and misogyny on the campaign trail. And almost all of them have said some version of, well, I currently work in a male dominated field, so I've grown this thick skin, and it doesn't really bother me. And that answer, while totally valid and I understand that, has always rubbed me the wrong way. Like we have to adapt to this misogynistic culture. So do you think that is slowly shifting, especially in the face of, you know, Trump openly admitting that he sexually assaults women and the Me Too movement? Are we moving towards less misogyny or more because of that?
Well, it's a good question. Boy, I hope so.
Yeah.
I don't think we're there yet. And, you know, it's an interesting, I was talking to a friend of mine about our former coworker, Jennifer Palmieri, just wrote a wonderful book called Dear Madam President.
Yes.
And in it, Jen expressed that she was a little surprised that Hillary got hit with as much sexism as, you know, sort of overt sexism as she got. And my friend was saying, well, I'm surprised that she was surprised by that. And I said, no, I was too. Like, honestly, I feel like I've now been sort of radicalized by being in Emily's List and seeing it firsthand. But I think it's something, particularly before Hillary, we didn't want to believe, right? You just don't want to think that that's something that's still drives people, and certainly not people that we like or that we trust or that we see on the news. And yet I think there was a lot of it, even from the news media. You know, it's always remarkable to me when you have a number of people calling out Hillary's voice and, oh, she's shouting at me again, or her voice is so annoying, when it's like, I watched Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders, and both those guys get up and just basically shout into a microphone for an hour. And that's charming when it's a guy, right?
Right.
Like, but it's annoying if Hillary, you know, raises her voice at all. And that's something that it's like, it's such a minor thing, but it happens. And I think now, hopefully, we've noticed it more. And hopefully, as more women do this, that if nothing else, I mean, I don't know that we ever get it to go away.
Right.
Again, I do think it's helpful the more women we see running for office and the more women we see in office, because then it's not unusual, right? Our brains can process that, like, oh, a congressperson could be a lady, right? but I think it's still there. And I think hopefully the next step is for us to call it out more openly, and to acknowledge it and say, like, that's not right, or, you know, that's sexism, what just happened, rather than just kind of let it go or be afraid to call it out or think that, you know, that's too sensitive, you're being too PC or something like that, right? So that's certainly my hope. I don't think we've solved this problem yet. I think our women are all still seeing it. But I hope that, especially in a Trump era, that people sort of, you know, and you're right, like in a time when we have Time's Up, which was, and Me Too, which was so powerful because it was so many women speaking, you know, speaking out loud, right? And knowing that they had the sort of backup of their sisters, right? I'm not alone. I can say this. I think, hopefully, with all of that we're moving in the right direction. But, you know, I don't know about you. I was struck by how many of my male friends who are not, they're not creepy men, right? Like, but we're kind of surprised by the volume of women they knew who came out and said Me Too. And I was like, yeah, how do you not know? Right. Because you don't live this, you know?
Right.
Sure. You don't see it.
Yeah.
I got it. Okay.
I kind of going back to this, this idea of vulnerability, because the Me Too movement and the Time's Up movement are really all about vulnerability. So do you think that that is a strength moving forward? Even as we're dismantling this idea that women are too emotional, you mentioned Jennifer Palmieri. She talks about in her book using a vulnerability as an asset. Do you think women are doing that?
Yes. Whether or not, and they might not call it vulnerability, right? They might call it openness. But I will say, you know, we've had a couple, Sol Flores, who sadly lost her primary, but I know she'll be back, was one of our candidates in Illinois in the Gutierrez seat. Right. And Sol told a really powerful story about the abuse that she suffered as a child and sort of what it meant for her moving forward. Mary Barzi Flores is a candidate in Florida who's told the story of when she was 19 and her boss at the pizza place sexually harassed her. There is inherent vulnerability there in opening yourself up and telling that story. And I think for many of us just a few years ago, we can't imagine doing that, right? And yet there's something so powerful about them doing it. You know, my hope is Sol didn't win, but I'm certain she'll be back. My hope is Mary wins and she can go to Congress and take with her that understanding that is just different than it being an intellectual thing, right? But my hope is also that in just everyday women seeing that video and seeing that ad and knowing like, okay, it's okay. You know, it is not my fault. I can talk about it. We need to solve this problem, that it sort of engenders all those things. And so, yeah, I think in that sense, you know, whether you call it vulnerability or something else, I think it's really powerful. We're seeing women run ads where they're breastfeeding. Like, that's pretty exciting. You know, I think women are just kind of changing, candidates are just kind of changing what we think of. Like, it does not have to be, I will build a great military. I mean, I'm a Marine brat. Like, right. I'm for having a good military. I'm just saying, like, that's not, you know, our cookie cutter version of what a campaign ad should be is changing, right. Which is great.
Sort of relatedly, especially during the 2016 campaign, there was this refrain like, oh, I'm fine with a woman president, just not that woman. Is that related to this idea that, like, the idea of women in power, but then we hate the ambition and power that women show?
Yeah.
I
think so. I mean, you know, to go back, I mean, Jen mentions this in her book, there's something about her I just don't like, right? I think, you know, my hope is that we can call it out and we can talk about it and we can say, like, this wasn't just Hillary. Like, it, you know, some people, yes, you're allowed to not like Hillary, by the way. Like,
yeah.
People don't. I get it. I did. I happen to be a big fan, but, like, you cannot like Hillary, but sometimes some of that not liking, especially when you can't put your finger on it, and I'm just not sure, is some of the sort of the inherent sexist coverage that she's gotten. You know, it's some of that. And I think we still see that some. You know, you saw it some last year when Elizabeth Warren's star was on the rise and then Kamala Harris's star was on the rise. You saw some of that. Well, you know, maybe a woman president, but not Elizabeth Warren. And I think we're always going to have to fight that some.
Right.
But the more women we have out there, the more this becomes a, you know, she's a candidate. She's not just a woman candidate.
Right.
The better off we'll be. I mean, a piece of it is having spaces like this to talk about it, right? And to make people aware of it and to help people understand how to call it out. A piece of it is doing that work, calling it out. Like, this is not about women. It's about Latinos. But I noticed a few weeks ago, there was a news outlet that ran a headline that said Latino candidates crowd out primaries. And I was like, no, literally every person in a primary crowds out that primary, right? Why are Latinos considered the extras? You know, why are women considered the extras? And that's something that I think, you know, we need to keep an eye on because that keeps happening.
Right. And this is sort of a leading question, but What are some of the benefits of women in office? And as we move closer to gender parity and we don't have to celebrate 19% anymore, what positive things will come out of that?
So there are interesting studies that have shown, and I'm blanking on the exact numbers, but there are interesting studies that have shown that the women that we've elected, particularly to Congress, one, they get more stuff done, which I think probably surprises none of the women listening, right?
Really 0%.
They sponsor, right, exactly. They sponsor more bills. They just get shit done.
Right.
And these two and three are interesting because you would think they would be, in contrast with each other. Two, they work across the aisle more, but three, they're actually more progressive. And so what's interesting about that is they're bringing people to a progressive position, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think, it's not that they're just seeding their values. It's that they're helping people understand their progressive values and bringing people to that position. And that, to me, is a really interesting thing. I think writ large, I have a niece who, started asking her parents very young why her placemat was only boys, because it was all the presidents, right? I think there is a value in seeing people that look like us making the rules that govern us. And I think the people who think that's just being overly politically correct are the ones who already see everyone, like Congress already looks like them. So I think there's value to that. And it's why we're also and we work with them a lot, but we're thrilled that there are groups like Latino Victory Project and like Higher Heights and Collective Pack. And, this takes work to make Congress look like us. But I also think, women, they have lived different things. And so they bring that experience in. I think there's a reason why it's, and this is a bipartisan effort, right? Every woman in the Senate has said we need to we need to change the sexual harassment laws. Yeah, I don't know where the men are,
Across the aisle.
Yeah. And I think, we're only focused on pro-choice Democratic women here, but I think having more women in office is a good thing. I mean, we wish there was a Republican version of Emily's List.
Right.
Now, I'm not sure there are many Republican pro-choice women left trying to run for office or who could make it through primaries there. But I think, not every one of those senators has acknowledged, at least, being sexually harassed.
Right.
But every one of them understands that, we gotta do a better job of looking out for women in these positions, because every one of them has dealt with what I'm sure all of your they've dealt with being shushed, or they've dealt with being shut down a little bit or being dismissed because they were a woman, because we all have at some point. And I want those people speaking for me, because they get my life a little better.
Right.
So I can't put numbers to that, but I think, there are legitimate things that, why it's good to have women. But I think it's just also, why shouldn't Congress look like us?
Yeah, I always think about how Collins and Murkowski in the Senate, they were not invited to a Republican meeting on health care. And then they voted not to repeal the ACA. Don't invite us to the table at your own peril.
That's right. That's right.
So I have one last question for you. On the show, we like to do what's called a gratitude check. So something good that's happening, that's getting you through the day, and it could be anything serious, silly. I like bats. I talk about bats a lot. So anything that is just good in these rather dark political times.
Yeah, for one, I will, the very personal thing I will say is go adopt a dog if you want to get through these dark times. Half of my former Clinton campaign staffers have done it. We've, emptied the shelters, and it's a wonderful thing. I myself adopted a dog from Kuwait, and so I feel like that's my own little, I got an immigrant in, yay. but I will say more broadly, I already mentioned it, but honestly, I count my blessings every day I come to work, because I am doing something that I think has a direct, women, we've already seen it. Women will hold Trump accountable. Women will make things better. We need more women in office. And so the idea that I get to come in every day and help at least a little bit on that is a great thing. who, when you think back to the moments in the last year of people really sort of fighting the fight, you know, it's Dianne Feinstein dropping the report despite like Republicans right. telling her she shouldn't. It's Maggie Hassan, you know, really calling Betsy DeVos out on what it means, you know, that she doesn't understand the policies around kids with special needs. You know, it's Elizabeth Warren doing everything Elizabeth Warren does, right? Like it's, it's Maxine Waters reclaiming her time. I mean, the people who have really stood up and said, hold the phone, have been the women. And like you mentioned Murkowski and Collins. I mean, you know, I was always a little scrappy about the fact, I'm glad John McCain voted the way he did, but I love the fact that it was like McCain saves the day when it's like, yeah, right. the ladies were already there.
Yeah, right.
So
they kind of did the hard work already.
That's correct. That's correct. And so for me, that's my, I mean, I feel it every day is that I get to come in and every day we have more women reach out. I mean, that 34,000 number grows every day. And every day, you know, we've already endorsed, you know, we've endorsed a ton of people. I firmly believe we are going to flip the house and we're going to do it with women. And that's a pretty good thing to come into work for every day.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's exciting. And that's the thing that I'm really grateful for.
I love that. I love that. And if we have listeners who want to run, how can they get involved?
Ha. Yes. They should go to emilyslist.org. And there are a variety of ways you can sign up for trainings. You know, you can sign up for our Run to Win like Facebook group. You can get a lot of information. We also in our training center, we now have a place where you can actually see what offices there are in your area.
Awesome.
So, you know, work with us. There are a ton of great groups out there. So I would encourage you like explore all your options. But if you're a woman who wants to run, we got you covered.
Yeah, that's amazing. Well, thank you, Christina, so much.
Yeah,
for talking to
happy
me.
To be here. Love yeah. the podcast.
Thank
so,
you.
Very exciting.
Yeah. So you can follow Christina at C Reynolds NC, and you can follow Emily's List at Emily's List. So thank you again, and thank you for fighting this, like doing the good work.
We're trying. We're trying.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye.
All right, Hellions, that is it for me. Thank you so much for listening, and I hope you enjoyed this slightly different format. I thought it was really important to put some of the things that Christina and I talked about in larger context. So have a great weekend, be kind, and Drexel and I will see you back here on Monday.